Here's some of the stories of the day. Well, listen to this. Virgin Galactic, a British company created by entrepreneur Richard Branson to send tourists into space, and New Mexico have announced an agreement for the state to build a $225 million spaceport. Virgin Galactic also revealed that up to 38,000 people from 126 countries have paid a deposit for a seat on one of its manned commercial flights. My check, by the way, has not gotten to him yet, including a core group, by the way, of 100 founders who have paid the initial $200,000, the cost of a flight up front. Virgin Galactic is planning to begin flights in late 2008 or early 2009. Virgin will have a 20-year lease on the facility, which will be built largely underground in the southern part of the state near the White Sands Missile Range. They will lease it for 20 years with annual payments of $1 million for the first 5 years, rising to cover the cost of the project by the end of the lease. This is pretty dramatic, and it shows the privatization of space. The chief executive officer of the electronic voting company Diebold, who once famously declared that he would deliver Ohio for President Bush, has resigned effective immediately. The board of directors and Wally O'Dell mutually agreed that his decision to resign at this time for personal reasons was in the best interest of all parties. Wall Street reacted with joy. The company stock went up. O'Dell's resignation comes just days after reports that the company was facing imminent security fraud litigation surrounding charges of insider trading. It also comes on the heels of an interview with a Diebold insider who raised new allegations of technical woes inside the company, as well as concerns that Diebold may have mishandled elections in Georgia and Ohio. In a moment, Bev Harris, author of Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century, our guest. She's been on this story for a long time now. It's time for her to react. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to keep Bev Harris the entire hour, so we're going to open up phone lines for you later on this hour. Bev Harris, author of Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century, began writing on the subject of electronic voting machines in October of 2002. Harris has spent over 2,000 hours researching voting machines. She's interviewed hundreds of witnesses, including many election officials and even voting machine programmers who work directly for the firms that build these machines. During the course of writing Black Box Voting, she discovered that one of the largest voting machine companies, Diebold Election Systems, one we just talked about, had committed a massive security breach, leaving thousands of sensitive voting program files on an unprotected website. These files have now triggered a national investigation and activism movement to restore clean, trustworthy voting machine systems. She's our guest on Coast to Coast. Bev, I don't know if we should say that you were right. It may be a little too early for that, but the resignation of Walden O'Dell, does that come as a surprise to you?
No, not a surprise at all. And in fact, we had reported on the securities fraud, the likely stockholder suit, as long ago as last July. And the bad news just keeps on coming. Today, a county in Florida has decided to dump Diebold. It's the first time this has happened. They will never be using Diebold again. We did the fourth in a series of security tests and showed them a devastating hack to the Diebold system, which is going to have repercussions that may result in product recall.
You know, Bev, Wall Street reacted with joy with the announcement of his resignation, jumping almost a couple dollars in stock today. That almost, one could say, soared when they heard the news that he was leaving. Why did they receive the news so well?
Well, you know, under Wally O'Dell's management, I can't say leadership because it really wasn't very good leadership, so many blunders have been made. For example, in 2002, Diebold decided to buy this voting machine company. Now, the voting machine company it selected to do an acquisition with was actually a company that was founded by three stock market manipulators, and then it hired as its main stockholder and one its main programmer, they hired an embezzler. Well, Diebold decided to buy this company under Wally O'Dell. That wasn't the best move that you could possibly imagine.
No.
And, you know, so that shows that they didn't do due diligence, because what happened is this is a company, Diebold, which deals with ATMs, security things, they had an excellent reputation going back 150 years. Their reputation is toast, mainly because of the blunders in their voting machine business. And then, of course, he made this huge blunder where he wrote a letter to the Republicans in Ohio promising to deliver an election to a specific candidate. Well, you don't really want to do that if you're running a voting machine company. And, of course, that landed the company in tremendous hot water. Added to that, in June, they had to restate some earnings indicating, and this was in their ATM division, that they had, you know, kind of lied on their sales reports. And it's just been a mess.
And you're right, Bev. It's a 144-year-old company, and at one point considered to be one of the best companies in the industry. They will need a massive PR image to really change the direction and the plight of where Wally O'Dell took this company.
Exactly.
You're also right about his statement where he basically said he was going to deliver Ohio for George Bush. And I guess subsequently, after you have gone public with this information, you've been on Coast to Coast and you've been on a number of other media throughout the country, Wally O'Dell apparently sent a note out to his staff members saying, I don't want anybody any more involved in any politics. We're going to refrain from all this. It was a little too late, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. And to make matters worse, one of their board of directors went right on and became the delegate for the state of Ohio for George Bush. So they didn't even follow that edict, even though it was late and should never have been needed in the first place. His management was just disastrous.
Of course, one of the other problems is Diebold in the tracking system, the paper trail. What's been going on in that arena now, Bev?
Well, that it's getting worse than just the paper trail problem. Because even their voting machines with ballots are showing themselves to be completely unreliable. The test that we did today in Leon County, Florida, was truly devastating because it used a system that has paper ballots. And, of course, they're also selling systems that don't have paper ballots. But this one used a paper ballot system and actually corrupted everything so thoroughly that there was no way that the voting machine's results can ever be trusted. You would actually have to take and count every ballot by hand because every step of the voting machine system was corrupted and gave the incorrect result. And it was done in one step for about $300 by one guy. So, you know, it doesn't get worse than that.
You know, and perception is so important nowadays. And this guy's perception in the public is really horrible. And, you know, nobody cares about who he would support politically. That's his business. But the fact that he heads up a company that made electronic voting machines, the fact that he said he was going to deliver Ohio for George Bush, I mean, all that just sounded horrible. It was in poor taste. The guy just didn't think. Now that he's gone, what's going to happen to the company? What direction will they take?
Well, they have a long ways to go. The problem is they took a lot of shortcuts under Wally O'Dell, and if you look at consumer protection law, it doesn't cut you a lot of slack because you had a bad CEO that made a lot of mistakes. What is the situation now, especially in their voting machine industry, they have literally hundreds of millions of dollars worth of defective voting machines out on the market. And there really is very highly likely at this point that they're going to have to do a nationwide recall on those.
Oh, my.
And it doesn't really help to say, well, our CEO made a mistake because they have all these things out there floating around.
Well, we've got some mid-elections coming up in 2006. What happens? I mean, how are these cities, counties, and communities going to replace the Diebold systems that they may own?
Well, as happened here in Leon County today, the supervisor of elections here went to the county commissioners and simply said, I cannot run elections on this system. It wasn't even just that the system had tremendous security defects that had been proven, but Diebold was also not complying with its own contract. They weren't supplying the support that they were supposed to, you know. So he just said, I need money to replace the system, and the county said yes.
What they choice do they have?
Too.
Yeah, would he go back to the old punch card system? I guess you have to,
well,
don't you?
Well, no, he just, you know, there's other manufacturers that also have problems, but there are also some other manufacturers that are better than Diebold in terms of, you know, at least they haven't made so many misrepresentations and their products aren't as defective.
Bev, I want to hear from you because you are an expert in this arena, far more than any of us. If you had your druthers, how would you like an election handled? What kind of machines would be available? And just kind of outline for us the system that you think would be pretty darn reliable.
Well, the key is you have to have it overseen by the American public. You shouldn't have to be a mathematician or a cryptographer to understand how it works, because if that's the case, you've really just turned it over to some experts. And so what you want to have is there's a couple of different systems that I think have a lot of potential. You know, going back to the old hand-counted paper ballots is actually feasible if we could get people to understand that this really is something we need to look at. We have found precincts. Now, a precinct in America is usually a large one. It's about 1,000 voters. Well, we've found precincts as large as 3,500 voters that have a lot of different questions on the ballot that are doing hand counting successfully and getting their results in, you know, on election night, often faster than the voting machines and much less expensively. One of the things we need to do is go back and look at some of these kinds of places as models and see how are they achieving it. If the rest of the country says, oh, it's too complicated and we can't do it and we can't get it in that fast, there are places who are achieving it who have larger precincts and just as many questions on the ballot. So we need to go take a look at those and see how they're doing it. There's another idea that the gentleman who came and the expert who did the hacking in Leon County today has developed a wonderful tool, and it's ready to go, but they're going to need to have more manufacturers produce machines that do this. If you have a paper ballot, the newer kinds of voting machines, you can run it through that, and it will read the ballot and at the same time take a digital photograph of the ballot. Well, all those digital photographs can then be collected, as well as, you know, counting it the normal way. They can collect them on a CD. Citizens can get a hold of that, and they can examine the ballots for themselves. And I like that idea, too, because it puts the American public in charge.
I like that, too. And at least it gives you the feeling that we are watchdogs over this kind of system.
Exactly. I think the best thing that's come from, you know, the really bad revelations about these voting machines is that American citizens are getting involved again. One thing I don't want to see, occasionally I'll hear the scientists say, well, we'll develop a wonderful technology solution and you can all go home to your families again and don't worry about it. I think that's the worst thing that could happen. A democracy is healthy when lots of people are out there watching and mucking around and asking questions. It's a little messy, but it's very stable.
You know, Bev, when we first had you on Coast to Coast a long time ago, and you were bringing this issue to the forefront, a lot of people didn't understand it. A lot of people didn't know that it was as serious. And, you know, here we are now, and I don't want to say it's capped off with the resignation of Odell, but it surely tells me that the things you were talking about were right on the button. Right on.
Yeah. I hate to say I told you so.
Go ahead,
but,
say
you know, we were
it. Go
called
ahead,
every
say
name,
it.
Yeah, we were called every name in the book. You know, I'm a conspiracy theorist. And true, turned out that everything I said turned out to be true. And what was a little bit unfortunate is we did have a fairly large contingent of American scientists who had the skill to back up what I was saying. But they didn't step forward because they were worried about losing their grant money and being too controversial so that the Congress wouldn't invite them to testify. So, you know, it's not just me running the organization Black Box Voting now. There's another woman by the name of Kathleen Wynn who's just wonderful. We're a couple of women in our mid-50s, and two old women, basically, had to go to Europe to bring over experts to come in and tell us what's really in the voting machines. We went to Finland, and we got another expert who teaches at the University of Florida, but he's originally from the Bahamas. I mean, why in the world Well, do two ordinary citizens have to go overseas to bring in computer scientists who will tell us the truth? Now that they've come in and told us the truth, the United States scientists are stepping up to the plate and saying, well, indeed, they're right. But I'm very saddened to see that they wouldn't step up to the plate and they left us dangling out there for years. And, you know, I guess I don't know what to say about that. And I think in a way we also have to hold their toes to the fire, because there are scientists in the U.S. that have known about these problems but felt it would jeopardize their career to come forward with it.
You know, what I find sobering, at least for us, is that, you know, we handle a lot of conspiracy-type programs here on Coast to Coast. But eventually, Bev, it seems that all of them come to fruition. Eventually, the truth comes out. And it looks like these people, the Alex Joneses of life, the Bev Harrises, and others who talk about these things that at one time seem so far-fetched, that seem so way out there, these issues become true eventually, a year, two, three, or 4 years later. And then everybody sits back and they go, oh, my God, they were all right. And I'm at a point now where when we look at things like the avian flu and other issues too, I'm now my belief system is I don't trust any of these people anymore.
Well, and that's a good point, because think about it. This is the mainstream press, in the New York Times and the major TV network news. They feel insecure about covering a story unless they have academics or something like that behind it. Well, the problem is academics survive only on grant money, and the grant money only flows in if they're not too controversial. So you find that these issues don't get tackled by the very people that are the only people, you know, who will get coverage from the supposedly blue chip, you know, or blue ribbon kinds of newspapers and so forth. And so it just becomes very, very difficult. I guess it's a good thing that citizens come forward and just keep hammering away until the truth comes out. But it's awfully hard. It's harder than it should be, because I think we need to take a close look at the restrictions placed on our scientists. And we also need to take a close look at the supposedly top media outlets who really have shied away from stories until groups like yours bring out the truth first.
Well, I want to tell you, Bev Harris, that I am very proud of the work you've done. And I'm glad America has people like you who stick their necks out and they don't back down. So stick with us. We'll be back in a moment. Bev Harris, our guest. We're going to take phone calls now on, I think, truly a remarkable story, the resignation of the chairman of the CEO of Diebold. He simply turned his resignation. He was the chief executive officer, and time finally caught up with him. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Bev Harris. Bev, when does the potential fraud litigation come to the forefront, really come to the forefront?
Well, that can take a long time, and there's actually several different kinds of litigation that are proceeding against Diebold in different venues. There's a very interesting case, by the way, in North Carolina, where Diebold refused to comply with some of the state elections requirements, and then, they kind of got around it, and there's some they're being sued there by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The securities fraud just was announced today, and I'm sure that they'll be going through the first phase in a class action lawsuit, which is collecting together all the plaintiffs, and the next phase after that goes into discovery. But I think it will be a very interesting suit. We have an analysis of that on our site, of some of the ammunition that they have, really, and our website is blackboxvoting.org. And, some of the things that are a problem, as we talked about, are the destruction of the trade name. These investors, their stock in Diebold was worth $57 a share. It's now down to 36, in the 30s, and has been in the 30s for months now.
And it was even lower. It took a ride today because of the announcement of the resignation.
Right. So, I mean, it's very troubling because it really was caused by, you know, not doing their due diligence, making sloppy statements, having shoddy products go out the door because they were more interested, and we could prove this, you know, they were more interested in making sales because they were in a hurry, there was elections, there was money coming in for buying these voting machines. And they knew there were problems, but they kind of didn't deal with them. They wanted to get those sales made first and maybe clean it up later. And as we all know, that's a prescription for disaster.
Talk about prescription. It's almost like Big Pharma racing to get a drug out when they know it's not any good for people.
Right.
Sad, sad, sad. Well, you know what might happen, too? They may either spin off this elections division or company or shut it down. Who knows what they'll do with it?
Right. But, well, it's only 5% of their revenue. So it's amazing that they took such a huge hit, you know, for something that really was a very minor part of their revenue.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. First of all, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
George, hi. Fred from Michigan.
Hey, Fred. Welcome to the show.
I'd like to ask Bev, knowing everything she knows now, and by the way, Bev, I believe I saw you in a Free Speech TV documentary, Orwell Rose in His Grave, or perhaps it was Election Fraud. In the video, you appeared along with Charles Lewis and maybe Noam Chomsky and a fellow from, was it the University of Illinois? Or
oh, your phone's breaking up, Fred. Try to get your question in real fast.
Okay. Bev, would you agree with me that the chief executive, Junior Skull and Bones Bush Laden, and his cabinet, which are that comprise the New American Century.org group, shouldn't they all be impeached and put away for life in prison?
Okay, let's do one thing, though. Let's not call him Bush Laden. He is our president. You might not agree with his politics or what he's done or some of the direction, but I wouldn't go there. But go ahead, Bev.
Well, I'll say something that some people don't like to hear, but, you know, I'm in the field a lot looking at what's going on with elections, and I think it actually slows the process of election reform down when we think that it has to do with George Bush rigging elections. This stuff started decades ago, and it started on the local level, and it is so entrenched that we have a pretty thoroughly broken system now. It's going to take a lot of work to fix what's gone on. And so while Bush may have capitalized on some of the weaknesses in the system, which make it fairly easy to manipulate. And by the way, Kerry might have also, especially in New Hampshire. It's not really about a particular candidate stealing elections. It's about a system that became more and more corrupt and broken over many decades because we weren't paying attention.
We just let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hello. Interesting program. I've tried many times getting through to you, but this is the first time I have, and coincidentally, I just had oral surgery the other day, so I'm not able to enunciate very well. I did
okay.
Have a question for Bev. If this was common knowledge regarding the Diebold discrepancies, I remember hearing a thing on NPR just before the election. It was like 4 or 5 days before the last election, where 1,250 university computer experts warned that it was open to manipulation. And I was astounded that I heard that one time and one time only. These are 1,200 people like you were saying about the grants and the discrepancies on their credibility. They put their message out. They had a clear warning. Why was it so suppressed in the media that before the election? I don't understand.
Well, first of all, they didn't put a warning out. What the 1,200 scientists did was they said they needed a paper trail on
right,
the machine.
Because it was open to backdoor.
Right. Well, they just basically said, we believe that, you know, for good auditing, it needs a paper trail. But it became more disturbing because we actually sat down with some of these scientists and showed them the hacks. And there were a number of very prominent scientists who knew of specific vulnerabilities in the system that was going to count 30 million votes. That's one-third of the election in 800 locations in 30 states.
Right.
And they chose not to tell because they thought it would be too controversial. So they're just now, you know, a year and a half later, starting to say, well, you know, maybe we need to deal with it. So in a way, it's kind of like we need the scientists to back this up, but on the other hand, they need to become much more forthright about what they know, because saying that, gee, you know, I can't tell you about specific problems that I happen to know about because it's controversial, so I'll let the election go on anyway, isn't really a very good solution. But it is true that these scientists did come forward. I think if they would have been more courageous about dealing with the specific problems that they knew and backing that up, which they could have done, then they would have gotten the media coverage, and I think it would have been solved much sooner.
Right, because immediately after the election, we were telling the Russians how to run theirs. That was coming
right. That's right.
And it's the pot calling the kettle black. You know, it's
exactly
it's amazing. But I appreciate your scientific research, and you know, they had all the lawyers in Ohio, lawyers and people that followed up in those couple of counties in the after vote. They found discrepancies in small areas of several thousand votes going towards our current president, which weren't even able to be, they weren't even there, those constituents.
Right, ghost voters. They didn't
right.
even exist. More votes than voters, how
right.
it figure.
It's amazing, and nobody called. I don't understand. I hope this democracy lasts, but it won't that way.
That's right, and it is hard to understand. When you really see it going on, it's just almost hard to believe, but it really is going on. It's really a problem. Thank you.
Let me tell you, Beth, it's going to last. It's going to last because people like you present things, and people like that caller, like Joe, come to the forefront. It's going to last, and it's going to take some bumps in the road, but you know what? In the long run, I think it's healthy.
Yes, I agree with that. It's like, I think, you know, I'm of the age where I remember Watergate, and people said, oh, this will tear apart the country. Well, it didn't. We're stronger than that. We can do this. But we do have to face the problem squarely.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're up with Bev Harris on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there.
Yes, sir. Take
this
it away.
Joe from Bellevue.
Okay, Joe.
Pardon me for you know, being ignorant, but we're about 70,000 people here, and we still do ours on hand count, and I'm just wondering what the cost is for the machines compared to a hand count. And
well, it's crazily higher. Now, you said you're from Bellevue. What state? Because there's several Bellevues I know of.
Bellevue, Nebraska.
Nebraska, that's what I thought, because
by the
Bellevue,
way, Joe,
Washington uses machines.
You're not an idiot. You've got one of the better questions of the night. Go ahead.
Indeed,
Bellevue.
And you know, there are a number of places that do. I think it's a wonderful question, because one of the ways you solve a problem is you go find some place that's doing it successfully, as he's talking about, with the hand counting, and see how they do that. Because I will tell you that the cost of these machines, it only the government can create such a boondoggle. This is what they did. They said, we're going to take $4 billion of taxpayer money, and we're going to require every place to buy new voting machines by a deadline, which happens to be December 31st, coming right up in the next couple weeks. And they have to buy all these machines or lose the money, but we're not going to say what the machines, what standards the machines have to meet
until
the next year.
Did they force people, Beverly, to buy specific machines? I mean, did they come out directly and say, buy Diebold's machines, for example?
In some states, yes. In some states,
really?
They were ordered by the Secretary of State of that state to buy Diebold. And there was a lot of this kind of contract steering, is what it's called, where there were some companies that were more credible and more qualified, and they would just somehow forget to put them through certification.
It's
and
almost like
never
no
get
bid.
To the table.
Well, we've seen this happen before, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. First-time caller line, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Hey. Yeah, it's David Williams from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I love your show. Anyway, nice. Look, I've got a couple multi-choice or multiple questions. I want to know, does Bev feel that George Bush stole the election? All right, number one. And who does this system seem to serve? I mean, is this Illuminati? Is this, what is it? I mean, I don't know. And what is the percentage of the error in the machines?
And, well, these are great questions.
Just a few here now, Dave. Let her answer a couple.
I know how you hate those multiple, but hey, I'll just hang here and interject if I can. If not, that's fine.
Go ahead.
But, you know, percentage of error is important. I don't think George stole the thing on purpose. And then, once again, I'm not a great conspiracy theorist like Bev, and I guess, but, you know, if they're manipulating this thing, is this the Illuminati behind this or what?
Well, first of all, as a conspiracy theorist, I would say I'm a conspiracy theorist in the RICO sense. Now, RICO stands for the type of conspiracy that has to do with racketeering. That's more what I think we have here as a business plan. There's people making a lot of money on this because they're running after that $4 billion the government put in there, you know, lures them in with. But let's talk about who benefits. It started, and we've got a new book coming out in the next few months, and it's going to talk about this kind of infrastructure. But it started with the county supervisors and the councilmen and the sheriffs. And the reason it started there is because that's where the money flows. You have land development deals and land use zoning things. Huge amounts of money flow through there. They want to influence the people that make those decisions. With the sheriff, that's where contraband is controlled, guns, drugs. And they also, by the way, guard the ballots. So initially, a lot of this election manipulation was taking place on the local level, dealing with those types of races. And what evolved was a patchwork of different kind of crooked locations. And now, yes, it is a little bit more possible to manipulate an election on a national scale. It's still not easy because there's a lot of variation in different places, but it started locally, and that's actually how we have to go clean it up, is locally in our own backyards.
Okay, good. Thanks. How much time do we have? A couple more calls. Wildcard Line, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
This is Cliff from Medford, Oregon. We in Oregon like our mail-in ballot system. Have you found any problems there?
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry to tell you. There's two areas I would love to tackle after we get some of the bad voting machines, you know, dealt with. One is mail-in ballot, and the other is the voter registration systems, which are becoming computerized and have a lot of issues with the security of that. But the mail-in ballots, it could be a very good system. The problem is that they're lacking some key safeguards. You know, whenever you have – basically counting these things is just a – it's an accounting problem. And they're missing some checks and balances. Let me give you a specific. In my county, in King County, Washington, we have two-thirds of our ballots come in by mail, 600,000. But they know how many they mail out, but they don't count at the post office level how many get mailed back. They then turn them over from the post office to a middleman, a private company, that sorts them, and it turns ballots over to the elections division. Well, there's a problem there because there's no accounting for what came to the post office versus what showed up at the elections division. And the other problem with mail-in ballots, they're also counted by voting machines. And the voting machines from Diebold that count the mail-in ballots are lacking some key safeguards, so it's actually quite easy to keep fiddling with the voting machine count as the ballots continue to come in. You noticed in Washington State when we had this governor's race and they hand-counted the whole thing, they kept finding new ballots. 4 times, 4 months after the election, they're still finding ballots. Well, you have to wonder if they were finding ballots or they had to make the numbers work, because the absentee voting system with the voting machines is really prone to manipulation, unfortunately.
You know, Bev, we've had voter fraud since we've had elections in this country. Should we merely just throw our hands up in the air and go, it happens?
Well, you know, that's what the talking point is. They say, oh, we've always had it. And that's true. We've always had it. But when you have systems like the Diebold system, it puts it on a whole new scale. Instead of having to go running from precinct to do something, you literally, and this is what we demonstrated here in Leon County today, one guy can come in and take control in less than a minute.
That's incredible.
Of tons of votes. I mean, votes from all the precincts. So you really can't it's really a different situation, and we have to get some of these things solved. It's kind of, I do look at it, though, like, you know, plugging the holes in a dike. You say, well, where's it leaking the worst? Let's go over there and fix that, and then there will be other leaks that spring elsewhere.
What do you think of a system where people merely vote by telephone? They don't even go to one of these
streets. Oh, I think it's awful.
Oh, you do?
I think it's
okay.
Horrible. Yes.
Well, throw out that idea, then.
And also the military wants to vote by email and by fax. You know, here's the thing. If it worked pretty good, and it did, our elections used to work pretty well, don't fix it. When you keep fiddling with things, you open up all kinds of new ways to mess with things, and by the time the citizens catch up to what's going on, you know, another few years have gone by.
Sometimes being less sophisticated is the better way to go.
Exactly. There's less things to do. If you have a hand-counted, an all-hand-counted paper election, there's four or five ways, significant ways, to kind of fiddle with it. And there has evolved over the years some good ways to deal with those. With computerized voting, there's 150 ways to deal with it, at least. You know, 150 ways to manipulate it. They more grow all the time. And the reason is simply because it's a much more complex system. The more complex it is, the more little holes you can find.
All right, Bev, thanks. We are out of time, but blackboxvoting.org is the website, and I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about you and your work, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Bev Harris.